This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. When we left you at the end of our full hour on the Patriot Act last week, the hammer was about to fall on three of the act's provisions. And fall it did. In a last-minute session on the Hill Sunday night, the Senate couldn't agree, again, on passing a set of reforms known as the USA Freedom Act, which the House had passed in mid-May. So those three provisions sunsetted as scheduled at midnight, including Section 215. That's the part of the law the NSA used to justify the collection of metadata from your phone calls.
2 days later, the Senate finally passed the USA Freedom Act to rein in the metadata program somewhat, and President Obama signed it into law later that night. Since the revelations of Edward Snowden, Section 215 of the Patriot Act has been best known as the provision used to sanction NSA mass surveillance. But back in 2002, it was known as
the so-called library provision.
Opponents of it refer to it as the library provision.
Section 215, what we're calling the library provision.
Brooke, you know that for many years I commented on advertising for Good Morning America, right?
Yeah.
But did you know that I had kind of a dust-up with Diane Sawyer back in 2002 about this very thing? It was about my pick that she wasn't too thrilled about for TV Ad of the Year, and I picked it. It was a public service announcement because I found it highly ironic.
Well, I haven't heard it, so let's play it.
Excuse me. I can't seem to find these anywhere.
Huh. These books are no longer available.
I didn't know.
May I have your name, please?
Why?
Excuse me.
What did I say?
We just have a couple of questions.
It's a campaign about what if there were no American democracy? What if the world were like this? And it's very chilling, very Twilight Zone. The irony is, in the post-9/11 environment, America is like that. They are taking books out of the library, and they are watching our library behavior. Under Attorney General Ashcroft, things have changed.
Well, again, Bob Garfield, with his opinions, as always, of the ads of the year. And as we say, it's an unusual and earnest year. Thanks a lot. Coming up next.
Your contract was dropped pretty shortly after that, right?
Yeah, this turned out to be pretty expensive opinions. ABC said they didn't fire me because of that, but they did drop my contract, so there you are.
Maybe Diane Sawyer's view was obstructed a little by her, you know, very large flag pin.
Was she really wearing a flag pin?
I don't know, Bob. Just read the next intro.
The American Library Association has opposed the practices of Section 215 for more than a decade and said this week that the passage of the USA Freedom Act was cause for celebration, but that there is still more work to be done. Karen Duffin reports on how libraries became a headliner in the battle against Section 215 starting all those years ago.
It was October 28th, 2001.
Deborah Caldwell Stone, a deputy director at the American Library Association, was sitting in her office when her boss walked in with a huge stack of paper.
It was 385 pages long.
It was the entire text of the Patriot Act, which had just passed. She asked Deborah to read it carefully and to flag anything that she thought might be wrong with the law.
And I was starting to read this one portion. It was Section 215 of the Patriot Act. And it talked about providing information without any probable cause, any tangible thing, in secret, under a gag order. And I just said, this is wrong. This is unconstitutional.
But this was only 6 weeks after 9/11. So if the ALA poked holes in the Patriot Act, they'd risk public backlash. Or worse, political retribution. They'd be biting the Congress that fed them. But this wasn't the first time that librarians had clashed with the FBI.
Up next on C-SPAN, a House Judiciary Subcommittee hears testimony on the Bureau's plan to conduct surveillance at certain libraries across the country.
That was a 1988 congressional hearing about what was called the Library Awareness Program, which sounds like a nice local outreach effort. But according to Allison McCrina, founder of the Library Freedom Project, it actually was
a secret program to spy on the library records because, and I'm not making this up, the FBI believed that librarians were secret KGB agents and that libraries were secret KGB recruitment centers.
Outraged librarians got assurances from the FBI that they would end the program. But just to be sure, They then spent years getting laws or resolutions passed in all 50 states, which would guarantee special privacy protections for libraries. But, says the ALA's Caldwell Stone, when they read Section 215 in 2001, it just felt a little bit too much like 1988.
We went and talked about why it was patriotic to oppose the Patriot Act rather than to support it, and why it was a core issue for libraries.
In fact, protecting the privacy of library patrons is a foundational value for librarians, kind of like doctors and their do-no-harm oath. Because librarians see libraries as a safe space for curiosity, especially about topics that people might consider dangerous or sensitive, like a medical question. They say library patrons in particular need this safe space. As Allison Macrina explains,
we serve members of communities who are under more surveillance in greater proportion than they represent of the general population.
Immigrants, low-income populations, people of color, activists.
These are our communities.
So librarians, they rallied their community.
On a recent weekend at the public library, college students checked out the most controversial books they could find. It was a protest against the provisions of the Patriot Act that allow the FBI to more easily examine library records in their hunt for foreign terrorists.
At this point, the government began to fight back.
Today's speech by Attorney General John Ashcroft was billed as the first in a cross-country campaign.
But Ashcroft kept his speaking tour secret. So the ALA put out a call.
John Ashcroft would sweep into town, speak to law enforcement officers in a closed meeting.
Emily Sheketoff runs ALA's Washington office.
The librarians found out, and protesters would be out in front of whatever venue he was going to be in, and the media would go there, and the only people they had to talk to were us. And Ashcroft was getting more and more frustrated. And he takes off after the American Library Association says we're promoting hysteria.
They considered this a sexist comment. Librarians are predominantly women, but they decided to own it. The ALA made buttons that read,
I am a hysteric librarian, which everyone proudly wore.
John Ashcroft eventually apologized to the head of the ALA. And meanwhile, librarians rallied enough public support to help pass over 400 local resolutions denouncing the Patriot Act. And in a reprise of 1988, they pushed for legislation. Here's Vermont's then-Congressman Bernie Sanders in 2003 introducing
the Freedom to Read Protection Act, which would amend Section 215 of the USA Patriot Act.
Which lost in a tie, 210 to 210. So librarians got increasingly creative. One of the biggest things they were worried about were national security letters. These are basically super secret subpoenas, and the Patriot Act made it easier for law enforcement to issue these letters. And they now came with a perpetual gag order, which meant that if you got a letter, you could never speak of it.
So you can't say the FBI has come to the library and requested patron information, but you can say the FBI has not come to the library and requested patron information.
Allison Macrina said that libraries started posting so-called canary warrant signs in libraries, which say,
the FBI has not been here today. Watch closely for this sign to be removed.
But mostly librarians figured that the best way to protect their patrons' privacy was to have nothing to protect. So after a book was returned, the record of its borrower was deleted, and they started shredding paper records daily. Then in 2006, when the Patriot Act came up for renewal, Deputy Attorney General James Comey told librarians that they were safe from Section 215.
We've never used it in connection with a library or bookstore, as the Attorney General has said.
Librarians and library executives like George Christian in Connecticut breathed a little easier.
Much to my relief, the Attorney General insisted loudly and often that the Patriot Act had not been and never would be used against libraries. So we went on to other concerns.
But then, 4 weeks after Comey's testimony,
two agents came through this door, asked for me. They were right here. And there was a nice, well-dressed young man in a blazer. And then behind him was a much larger person wearing a spandex shirt. So I had no doubt about how robust he was. I was very amused. I took it as a good cop, bad cop thing.
Christian is the executive director of a consortium called the Library Connection. They provide technology to 30 local libraries.
He showed me the letter right here.
A national security letter, or NSL. Something John Ashcroft said had never been served on a library. But because of that gag order attached to NSLs, while the DOJ was saying this,
"We've never used it in connection with a library or bookstore,"
Christian in Connecticut, who knew that was a lie, couldn't say a word. After the FBI left, he called his lawyer.
So I said, "Well, the FBI was here. I told them to get lost. So now what do I do?" And she said, "Well, unfortunately, your only option is to sue the Attorney General of the United States." That was a little bit bigger than I had envisioned. So I decided I would just call the executive committee.
They told him immediately,
"Let's sue those SOBs."
The ACLU took the case, and Christian and the three other members of his committee sued the Attorney General, asking the FBI to show probable cause and to rescind their gag order.
All we wanted to do was just raise our hands and say, you know, we're librarians and we got a national security letter, so don't listen to the Attorney General.
The Connecticut librarians' names leaked to the press, and they became a media sensation. They were dubbed the Connecticut Four. But they were still bound by that gag order and were terrified of breaking it. They stopped answering their phones. They couldn't even tell their families.
One afternoon when I was under the gag order, my son came up to me and he said, "A reporter called the house and they said they wanted to talk to you about the FBI investigating you. What's going on?"
Peter Chase was one of the Connecticut Four.
For months afterwards, all I could think about is, what does my own son think I have done?
Their case was moving faster than expected. But before it could be resolved, the Department of Justice had a sudden change of heart.
Our attorneys got a call from the Justice Department and said, "We've been thinking about your clients. They said we've decided they're not such bad guys after all. We're going to take away their gag order."
Making these four small-town librarians the first people ever allowed to speak publicly about a national security letter. But it was too late to weigh in on the Patriot Act renewal that had passed just weeks earlier. As George Christian said at the press conference, it was like being allowed to call the fire department after your house burned down. Still, this lawsuit, says the ALA's Caldwell Stone, was a vindication of sorts.
"No, we weren't hysterics. Yes, you are doing this." And we had a vehicle to actually point to and talk about the impact of what this kind of law had on libraries.
But in 2013, after the revelations of Edward Snowden and a new administration, this one professing a love of transparency, librarians recognized that nothing much has changed. The other challenge to patrons' privacy? Patrons themselves. We've gotten so used to giving our data away, or rather exchanging it for things like Amazon's "if you liked this, you might also like that" recommendations. Library users are starting to ask for these same kinds of services from libraries, services that require data collection and storage. Libraries may be the last institution on earth fighting not to get our data. Most library systems require you to opt in to have your data stored, which doesn't seem to matter as much to their patrons. Peter Chase of the Connecticut Four.
"People say to us all the time, I have not committed any crimes. My life is an open book. I don't care if they listen in on my conversations." And so to them I say, "Do you have curtains at your windows at home? I'll bet you do, and I'll bet sometimes you draw them because you want privacy, and sometimes you open them up to have light, but you are the ones who decide, not the government."
So librarians spend a lot of their time helping people weigh these trade-offs, and if people do want privacy, teaching them how to pull the curtains. Macrina's Library Freedom Project does just that. With help from the Knight Foundation, she and an ACLU attorney have created workshops on how to maintain privacy online.
"I'm trying to bring these tools to ordinary people, and right now they're sort of in the realm of, like, the technological elite."
Knight is also funding the San Jose Public Library to create a privacy app. The app teaches people about privacy while they play a Mario-like game.
Side-scroller game where you'll jump up and hit the box and run down.
It asks you which privacy issues you care about or don't care about.
Based on your answers to those questions, you're actually given a personalized privacy path.
Aaron Burma manages the app.
And so the resources that you'll be given are tailored custom just for you.
Projects like Burma's and Macrina's help people make personal privacy choices. Meanwhile, librarians debate how or if to hold the line as a profession. George Christian says this was his main lesson from fighting their national security letter.
Our civil liberties are protected by our individual willingness to insist that the Bill of Rights be honored, that it's just not automatic. We have to be personally involved.
And while you are deciding how or if you want to be involved, don't worry, librarians have your back.
Have you even seen the ALA's Freedom to Read statement? It's like got gravitas. Like you have to read it in front of a stadium. The last line is my favorite. And it's basically like, this is why we will always support people's freedom to read. The last line is, freedom itself is a dangerous way of life, but it is ours. Librarians, right? I know.
For On the Media, I'm Karen Duffin.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Kimi Regler, Mira Sharma, Alana Casanova-Burgess, Kasia Mihailovich, Jesse Brenneman, and Sam Dingman. We had more help from Jenna Cagle, and our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was Greg Rippon.
Kat Tier Rogers is our executive producer. Jim Schachter is WNYC's vice president for news. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. On the Media is produced by WNYC and distributed by NPR. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Support for On the Media comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.